Welcome back to Flippers Always Win, episode 7. We have a jam-packed episode, so let's skip the intro ramblings of Flip, and we'll be bringing you Chris right after this message. Hi, I'm Flip, the host of Flippers Always Win. We have no sponsorships on this podcast, so in place of an ad, I would like to talk to you about democracy. If you're listening to this, it's either Election Day or after Election Day within the next few days of said election, and you're probably feeling some type of way. Regardless of how this goes, I'm recording on Election Day before we get the results. We'll see how this ages. Hopefully, not like spoiled milk, but keep calm. Everything's going to be just fine. Right? All right. We are back on Flippers Always Win, joined today by another very special guest, Chris. He is somebody who has one of the more unique backgrounds on Survivor and these social strategy shows that I could possibly bring onto this podcast. He is a really big Survivor fan. We both attended the University of Maryland and graduated the same year, and yet we did not know each other until after we graduated, and we met in this social strategy gaming world. Super excited to have you on the show, Chris. How's it going?
It's going well. I guess that's the internet age. You don't meet people in person. You just meet them through the internet now. So
yeah, that's pretty much the case, and appreciate you. I know you listen to some of the show here and you reach back out. Nice to catch up again here. So yeah, just take me through it, like from the start. How did it originate for you? And, you know, where are you at today?
I was sort of around for the origin of college Survivor. One of my really good friends, Austin, from the University of Maryland. He's a massive Survivor, super fan, super nerd, whatever you want to call it. When he was a sophomore, and he decided to give it a shot at running and hosting college Survivor, and Survivor Maryland was born. And as a freshman, I had seen him running the game for his first inaugural season. And like, these kids would come into the dorms with mud on their faces and sometimes blood on their faces. So the next year he reached out to me, recruited me. And I was like, dude, I've never seen an episode of the TV show. I don't know what it is. I don't know how to play. He was like, don't worry about it. Like, you're going to be great. You're going to have fun. So I played Survivor Maryland Outback. Go check it out on YouTube. That was, gosh, yeah. So that was 2013. So, wow, 11 years ago. And ended up playing again my senior year for an all-star season, also fully on YouTube. And then I got introduced to sort of the ORG, otherwise known as Orgs, which is online reality games. And that's how you and I met. I ended up playing a bunch of them. The first one, I was very hesitant, right? Austin kind of told me, like, these online games, they're cool. Give them a shot. I was like, no, that sounds lame. But I gave it a shot, loved it, played a bunch of them. Since, you know, the beginning of joining College Survivor, I watch most seasons. I was on a hiatus, but now I'm back. Met my girlfriend through online Survivor. So I don't know. That's the rough version of the story.
You say you've watched most of the seasons. Did you essentially just like end up binging? How quickly did you go through it?
I love the question. I think it's interesting with me because, like I said, I had never heard of it. And then I played it, right? And so if you go watch that YouTube season, like you're watching someone play as if you're watching like maybe like a Rupert, or, you know, you're just watching someone who's very newly introduced to the concept of it. The first season I ever watched was, I believe it was 27, which I think was a blood versus water season. But from 27 onward, because that was right around the time I first played, I was watching it live. Like, me and the college friends, we were doing watch parties. And so I got kind of thrown into like the not old Survivor, but not the new age Survivor. I was in the thick of like what I think a lot of people would consider some of their favorite seasons, right? Some of the best characters. There's some twists, idols, advantages, but it's not like overbaked. Then in preparation for my senior year season of Survivor Maryland All-Stars, I went back to the beginning. I think I binged 1 through 11.
So by the time that you played your second season, what had you learned just from the show Survivor, not from actually playing, just from the show Survivor that helped inform your gameplay the second time that you didn't know the first time?
The first thing that came to my mind is when you have a disagreement in Survivor with someone, or you vote for someone or they vote for you, you cannot write that off as like, we are now enemies. We are never going to work together. Like, the best players are very fluid and understand that just because somebody voted for you doesn't mean you have to gun for them. Now, there are situations where like someone votes for you, you know, they're after you, like, sure, they're your enemy, but you can't just write people off because you guys were on the opposite side of something. And I think if you look at the first time I played, didn't know anything, like I was, and I played pretty well, but I was mostly binary. It was either you're with me or against me type attitude. It was either like you want to vote with me, and if you don't vote with me, like I'm gonna get you out, right? And that can take you pretty far, but it can't necessarily win you the game. You really have to be willing to pivot.
You know, this podcast is not about Flip's journey through orgs playing Sequester, but even though I was a big, big brother fan, I had never been in an org when I first played Sequester, the show that we eventually met through. And so what you're describing on your first season of Survivor Maryland was pretty similar to the way I played. I was like, any threat that I perceive, my job is to kill you and run you into the ground. And I played pretty well, but it was a nightmare for everybody around me. It made for good, you can't even call it television, it made for good Google Hangout. I can relate to that point a lot without even having your specific experience, because yeah, you just have to take threats as they come. This game is chaos at its core. And the more that Survivor, the television show, progresses, you can see that chaos reigns supreme episode to episode more than it did for sure in the SD seasons, the 1 through 11 that you mentioned, but even the mid seasons, even in the 20s and the early 30s, it was starting to get more chaotic. I think Cagayan was a place where that chaos really started, and the show realized if we can actually have this organized chaos and make it a part of our weekly episodes, that increases the game. In terms of Survivor Maryland, I see a lot of the players who come off of Survivor CBS, and they're completely, it seems, through social media, like this is their lives. They are fixated on the game. And I know what that feels like. You had your college experience be Survivor. So talk to me a little bit about how that experience shapes your worldview, not just in terms of the people that you're around, but like, how do you perceive situations any different because you had all this experience at a pretty young age playing Survivor?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a really, really interesting question, to be honest. You know, it's funny, like I would get accused in like very normal situations of like trying to Survivor it. I made Survivor Flip Cup really positive in college, which some people really liked, some people hated. When we lose a round, we're going to vote someone off our team. So it went from being this fun game to now you're trying to outlast your own team and the other team. It shapes your morals. And this probably isn't everyone, but you do sort of learn to lie in a way that is okay, right? Like I think a lot of times in CBS Survivor or whatever versions, you know, people are like, oh, I'm doing it for the game, right? I'm doing it for my family. I'm doing it for the money. You know, you have to remember that like when you get back to real life, like people aren't going to accept that excuse of like, you didn't need to do this to try to win. Like this isn't that serious. I mean, it took up so much time of the 2 years I played. And even when I didn't play, I helped run it for the seasons in between my first and my All-Star season. Luckily, I also did other stuff in college, did some philanthropy stuff. I was in a business fraternity. So, I mean, it didn't like run my college experience for 4 years, but during the semesters where I played, it's pretty consuming.
Not just in terms of time, but in terms of the way that you're thinking.
Mentally, it is very consuming. Like not only the people, like let's say the 20 people in the game, you live with them to some extent. They're either in your building or they're in a nearby building or you have class with them. You start to meta think about every little thing, even to the point where like I remember being like, I don't want to even talk to friends of people in the game. Because if I tell them something about what I'm doing or like what I'm thinking, they're going to go tell their person. And like, I don't want that to. So you start to like kind of bubble yourself. into like a 24/7 survivor mindset, which is fine, I think, on the island for people that go play, because it is bubbled and you're there for a reason. But when you're in college, it's every 2 days or every 3 days that you're doing a challenge or a tribal council. But in between those events, you don't really feel like there's an off switch. That can be challenging, especially for someone who's like only 20 years old. It was tough. I mean, it was fun, but it was really tough.
It's already tough enough being in college, trying to navigate your world, create social relationships, and then throw in, like, honestly, the paranoia of what you're discussing. And again, it's not a criticism. I know it because on a smaller level and for a shorter amount of time, I was there. I remember it all too well. And I've read press from people who go on the show and they come back to real life and they say things like in their interviews, I was having trouble trusting my wife. You know, I was having trouble trusting my partner after on the island. And so you can easily extrapolate when somebody's truly living it 24/7, even in this bubble that you discussed, even if it wasn't necessarily just for fun, like it would be in college, it's not exactly something you can just switch off, especially if you were out there for a while, doing pretty well, lasting in the game. It is fully consuming. And I think that's one thing that if you haven't experienced this world in any way, that you don't really understand. You know, most of the people that I talk to about Survivor haven't really played one of these types of games. And I would advise those who ever do to be really careful, because it's really, really easy to sink into what you described. You were thinking about not wanting to talk to friends of friends because of some sort of situation. That's the way that you think when you're playing one of these games, but it's ultimately it's not healthy in real life. And I think I would like to hear a podcast. I'd like to hear interviews specifically from either people who've played Survivor or Big Brother, or even people on Survivor Maryland, something like that, about the mental toll that it takes. Because I remember when I was playing these games, even just through the internet, you know, I look back on it and I was like, you know, I was pretty mentally unwell for lots of it. It really messes with you. And I don't want to take away from the enjoyment that we all have for the show, because we all love the game for what it is. But there is a darker side to it that if you're not careful, it can affect you.
I totally agree. I also think, like, whether they admit it or not, a lot of people that love Survivor probably love the fact that it is kind of that battle between like the dark, bad, unethical side and like, and then the fun. Like, it's just a very tricky line to balance. But back in college when I played twice, my best GPA was from the first time I played. And I think that's because it was so natural and I was so wired. Then when you go fast forward to my senior year, I basically wanted that for 2 years. Like, I wanted to play All Stars. Like, I always brought it up. I prepared for it. I kind of pre-gamed, right? Like, I helped run seasons 3 and 4. And so my senior year when I played All Stars, that was my worst GPA. Totally opposite experiences.
That makes a lot of sense. I know that once players like on Survivor play a season, you know, there's always a chance that you can get called back for a second season eventually. I've been able to sort of read either bluntly or between the lines that a lot of the energy that they have after they play the first time can be geared towards, I hope I get to play again, trying to figure out, you know, what your social strategy is going to be with people who you may or may not even be playing with. It's really consuming. A lot of your social circles become the people that you either play with or have played with. You join this whole entire new environment, and that can be really great, you know, but it also, you just have to be a little careful. And, you know, you and me, we never actually played a season of Sequester together, but we had this meetup, and I'll tell the story a little bit. So we are both from the DC area, even though you're living in Denver now. And in 2017, we co-hosted a meetup of all these people who had played Sequester. It was like about 20, maybe even more probably than like 20 people. We got an Airbnb. And for the most part, it was just like a weekend where everybody was hanging out and going out. But, you know, as you might expect, for about a couple hours one night, one of the people who was there organized a game for us to play. And it was a really fast paced game. You and me get to the final four, and one of your good friends, it was her birthday, and she was also from the DC area. So she was functioning also as like basically another co-host with us. So she played really well. She had won one of these seasons of Sequester. She's a good player. And I ended up backstabbing her at the final four. I blatantly lied to her about what was going to happen in order to get her out, because I knew if she got to the end, we couldn't beat her. It ends up that you and me get to the final two, and you played a great game, and it was a close vote, and you beat me. And the thing that sticks out to me from it, I wasn't necessarily close to the girl that I lied to. We had just gotten to know each other. I would say we were friends, right? Without knowing each other too well. After that game, She never talked to me again, which is totally fine because, you know, there's only so many people you can have in your life. I'm not bitter about it. I understand. But like, she took it so personally. And it's not just a game move to some people. It is like, that is the way that you see a person. That's the way you treat them. That's now your relationship. And so I learned just from that, it's not just a game to a lot of people. Not everybody can just turn it on, turn it off, make nice later.
Yeah, I totally agree. I remember that game. That was a lot of fun.
It was a lot of fun. I don't regret it.
No, it was fun. I didn't realize that that person didn't talk to you anymore. I think that is the other thing that is either like it can transform or it can change how much you can control that switch of the ability to like see it as a game, know it's a game move. And where does the line get blurred of, hey, like you looked me in the eye as a human being and told me what you were or weren't going to do. Right. And it's like, now I can't. I think it's different if you come into a game with people, with a relationship and friends, especially if you have any type of soft handshake agreement with them. Okay, we're going to do whatever we can to not screw each other over, but we're going to play our own game, right? Or you go into a game with somebody with like a blood bond and you're like, we will never, ever backstab each other. And if we do, then we are good to never be friends. Like, it just depends on what you come in with. But when you come in with people, you never knew them. And then that's kind of their first experience with you is you totally screw them over. The lines get blurred. Now they attribute that betrayal to not only you in that game, but like that's kind of how they're going to view you as a person.
And if you do end up becoming friends with them afterwards, you have a lot of apologizing to do. You have a lot of making up to do, even though they were trying to probably do the same thing to you, but they just couldn't.
They didn't get the chance.
They didn't get the chance. And maybe they were capable of it, but you got there first somehow. And then if you, by God, end up playing a game with them anymore, you're terrified of the revenge that they want. And yeah, no, it sets you up for a lot of weird stuff socially later. I want to get into a quick thing about applying to Survivor. I have applied to Big Brother and Survivor a couple of times. I'm planning on applying very soon. I know that you've applied. We both follow casting producers on like Insta. Tell me about your experience real quick about applying to these shows. Where are you at in terms of wanting to be on the show?
I've only applied, I think, technically twice. And the first time I did, it was like 2017, 2018 time period. Then I did get a call back. I did an interview with a casting director over the phone. I think I was really into the idea of it in my early 20s. Like I had been playing, I had played in college, I did the online games. I was in probably the best physical shape I've ever been in. I felt very castable for my slot, my archetype, as they call it. Like I felt very at the pinnacle of like, yo, if these people are going to cast a tall, tatted, athletic guy, I have as much chance to get on now as ever. And then I kind of had a little bit of a gut punch, which was
Chris Underwood.
That name sounds right. Yeah. And so, you know, put yourself in my shoes. Like there were a lot of similarities. I was kind of like, damn, they're not going to cast another Chris with almost the same story. That it kind of made me take a back seat where I was like, damn, like I missed my shot. Now I know that that's not fully true.
When applying to a reality show, whether it's Survivor or something else, would you say the most important thing to remember is to play into an archetype? Would you say the most important thing to remember is like be yourself? What's the one thing to remember the most for somebody applying?
They tell you to be yourself. And I do think there is some truth to that, but you have to be the like most well-spoken and energetic, charismatic version of yourself. I think that's like 75% of it. And then the other 25% is being super self-aware. You have to stand out against people that are like you.
On to Survivor 47, the game at hand. Last night's episode, let's talk about the social gameplay.
The peak of the episode for me was the conversation between Caroline and Tiana. You got to see two people wanting to work together, but it also showed you they weren't like fully aligned. So they were sort of accepting each other's opinions because I think they knew there was another plan that could happen, which was obviously Rachel going home. I mean, and Caroline's shot has been shooting up in my like rankings, I guess you could say. But last night was just really good where she looked Tiana in the face and she was like, you're right. But, right. And that's always, I think, nice because a lot of times, and I have seen this, you know, a bunch with different players, people are so quick one player shares their opinion and then the other player immediately is like, no, why? Right? They immediately want to counter it versus Caroline really took the time to like understand, agree with Tiana's feelings, and then say, but here's why we're going to do this. Right? I just thought that was really interesting.
I personally thought her answer to Tiana, not only was it a great social answer, but her reasoning was mind-bending. It's good for us to go in as five because you and me won't even be the targets to begin with. That's some next level thinking in that moment.
It's definitely next level. She's thinking very sequentially about moves that can happen, and she's putting herself in the best position. So in her mind, she's like, let's go in with the alliance of five. Who knows? Maybe we get one or two people to vote with us and we have a majority. If not, if they do target us and we can't get people in our majority, they're not going to go for us.
Unless a player like Caroline in that situation is my number one, even if I like her, even if I'm working with her on some level, if I see what she says there, I'm like, wow, that's so good. I'm packing that note for later and being like, I'm getting Caroline out when I can. And that just goes to show like where the game's at these days. You can make the best argument, be really socially affable in that moment, get what you want, and yet you're making yourself a threat if somebody's paying attention to just how good you are in that moment. And she was so good.
She was so good. And whether she's genuine or not, because she is probably the best right now at like faking genuine.
Yeah.
Rome was giving this like bullshit sob story. And she was like doing the facial reactions in the moment to like, in the off chance that he looked at her, he would think she sympathized, when in reality, I don't think she really cared that much. I think that's why it was so important that she genuinely, or fake genuinely, whichever, but she genuinely took Tiana's opinion into consideration. She agreed with it to some extent. That kind of disarms Tiana from thinking that Caroline's trying to be combative to get her way versus it's more like agreeing. She even said it. Actually, this was really cool. She could tell Tiana was a little hesitant to voice her opinion. She was like, hey, we're just rapping. This is what we do. This is what allies do. We share our opinions and we talk it out. But Caroline geared the conversation to make sure she got what she wants. I think she disarmed Tiana in a way that, to your point, Tiana wasn't even in the mindset of assessing Caroline's threat level. The proof was in the pudding when Tiana went home. Tiana was shook. She did not expect Caroline to write her name down at all. She thought they were good, 100%.
If you're Rachel in that situation, what can you do as the complete underdog where you are obviously the one to go if something doesn't change drastically? Like, what is your strategy when you're fully on the bottom like that?
You're really, I think, caught between a rock and a hard place when you're put in that situation, because they give you this shot in the dark, which is a pretty low percentage chance. And it's pretty easy to negate. Like, it's pretty easy to convince someone to not use it, right? You just go to them with a plan. Because if they think there's a plan, now they can't sacrifice their vote, right? So like, if she thinks there's any inkling of truth, she now thinks there's a chance that her vote matters. You could always run with the like, I have an idol, like woo woo woo, like try to divert, but it very rarely works. Most of the time people know or don't know. It seems like Rachel did the right thing. She wasn't over commanding with a plan, but she did observe the cracks and jump into the right conversations.
I agree that she mostly did everything she could do. There was one moment in the episode early when they were strategizing after the challenge where I thought maybe she could have done something different.
Can I guess it?
Sure. Yeah.
Okay. I thought she should have gone to Caroline when Gabe was like, why wouldn't she pit them against? That was the only thing I thought she could have pitted the sides against each other.
That's how you know we were both in this warped world. For me, it wasn't even the first time after that, certainly, but it was when Tiana and her were actually talking early on and Tiana was pitching, I believe, Gabe to her. Obviously, the two members, if Rachel pitches this information to Gabe, can come together afterwards. And she doesn't have the benefit of knowing this. But Gabe, as we've seen previously, is already like on the fence with Tiana, already pretty ready to get her out. And obviously, Tiana's ready to get Gabe out. The worst thing that can happen to you is they see you as a snake and vote you out if you do that. But they were going to vote her out anyway.
Do that. You're totally right. You're totally right.
I think she played the conversations as well as she could. She wasn't as aggressive as you need to be. When you were in a fight or go home situation, she obviously lucked out.
For the group that won, I fully agreed with Saul giving that to Rachel. I think it's what I would have done. I think it's probably what most of that six would have done, because A, some of them are working with Rachel, and B, let's get one of those five out. Let's fracture them. Doesn't matter how, but let's fracture them. The only thing I disagreed with is I thought it was a pretty big miss from a social perspective, and maybe it's because he was boozing a little bit. I thought Saul could have either announced what it was. He could have made it a group decision, been like, hey, are you guys good with me giving it to Rachel? Like, I think it'll be good for all of us. Like, he could have built up a little bit of equity. Like, maybe not everyone would have appreciated him for it, but like, he's not in the best position in the game, even if it was a little smoke and mirrors.
Maybe he wasn't allowed to tell anybody for the drama of it. Maybe they were like, you can't tell anybody. And who knows, maybe not. It will be very interesting to see what his social strategy is with going forward. Like, maybe he just doesn't say it at all and creates chaos, which, to your point, he's not building up social equity at that point. But also, if you're the person who decides that and you're known, well, now there are targets on your back for a couple of reasons. One, because you found an advantage. And at this point, maybe it's always been this way, but if you find an advantage and have found out to be essentially in Survivor at this point, you're a sneak. And it's any reason to put a target on somebody, you know this, any reason at all you give to a group of people, they're going to use it to come after you. Because ultimately, these people aren't vicious people. It's hard to find a target. And so if you give anybody any sort of reason, they will take it. So that's one reason that it may not be advantageous for him at this point. Two, and this isn't his fault, let's say that it does become known that he gave this to Rachel. Now you've got an entire tribe of four in Tuku that are like
pissed off
that you didn't prioritize us. You could have worked with us, even though now he's appeasing the Gata tribe. So now either way, like if he helps Tuku and Gata finds out, Gata's after him. Now if Tuku finds out, either way, puts him in a rock and a hard place. That advantage doesn't really, in my opinion, help him in the game in any sort of way. At best, it becomes a net neutral, and very easily it becomes a reason to get Saul out.
I think I would have told at least one ally, like, hey, I got this. What do we do with it? Right? Like, even if I knew what I'm going to do with it, that builds a lot. I feel like it's like when you can ask people, like, what are we doing? Right? People love that question in Survivor when you ask him, what do we do? Because it makes them feel like you're with them.
I think that probably would have been the best thing that he could do. And again, I don't know if production was like, you can't do that. But one advantage I'm thinking that maybe could be good for him is if he keeps it a secret moving forward and nobody really knows who it was, that paints a target on Gata, because the implication would have been, oh, Gata's going to try to save one of their own. Of course, Lavo could have done it too, but you're going to point towards Gata more likely than not. And maybe that distracts from Lavo. So that's great. I don't really see an advantage of him telling everybody at this point, even Rachel. It's like, okay, well, thank you, but we don't have a relationship in this game outside of that. So I don't owe you anything.
No, I said the same thing. I was like, you either got to like make it part of your plan, or if you don't, like now you just got to kind of move on. So I'll be interested to see what he does. I think one other thing too, I thought of it because you brought up Gata, is like with who was on that tribe, it won't be that hard, I don't think, for Saul to not admit he did it.
Yeah. The look ahead to next week's episode, there is a shot right at the end. I don't know if you caught it or other people who are listening caught it, of Andy is walking through the jungle with sunglasses on, which, by the way, I don't know where those sunglasses came from, but he's like walking through in like almost like this funny modeling like Zoolander shoot. And I'm like, they're blatantly, of course, they do red herrings all the time with these things. And in the show, that's what makes it so great on a lot of levels, but they're blatantly telling us this guy is every single episode stepping up and up and up in the game, despite his shortcomings, despite his foolishness. Again, back since we talked about sequester, since we talked about orgs in this conversation, the first time I played, I was Andy, and it was a very different situation. I don't have to go into that, but I was Andy. I was an idiot at the beginning, and I was causing all this drama, and nobody trusted me. And this is why I now say never leave an Andy in the game, because just because you have a bad start doesn't mean you're not a smart and capable strategic player. And if you let them stay in the game, not only do you have somebody who's like, oh, we can just get them out forever, that person is still thinking and able to make moves, and they're better able to understand their social situation. Even if they didn't initially, they are an absolutely dangerous player. They will take your spot. He is going to take a lot of people's spots, unless this whole thing is a big red herring and he gets found out. He's a guy who everybody can see what he is doing wrong, and it doesn't even matter for him. And that's the most dangerous person, because you can't get them out. Like, what's the reason at that point? And so Genevieve, obviously, Julia said this yesterday when we were watching. Genevieve obviously has a preclusion to working with these misfits. Julia said, you know, Genevieve's a mastermind. And I'm like, that may be true. She already put together a really nice plan. I think even more so than a mastermind, she is an opportunist.
And isn't she a defense attorney? That might make sense.
She's a lawyer. It does make a lot of sense. And talking about Lavo real quick, because I haven't talked about Lavo so much here before we go into the winner picks. I think Lavo, unless Saul gets found out here, I think Lavo is doing an absolutely great job of slinking into the background. Obviously, losing Rome helps their cause. Probably a lot of sympathy out there for them because they had to live with Rome. And so people are like, okay, let's just leave Lavo alone subconsciously. And I think we're going to see Gata and Tuku sort of going at it. And I think ultimately that opens the game up a lot for Tini and Genevieve, especially Tini. I think Tini might be in the best social position in the game right now. What are your thoughts on each of the Lavo members' social games right now?
Tini's doing solid. I love Genevieve. I think she's wicked smart. How she navigated Rome was quite impressive. Like, she took him as far as any human possibly could. And then when it was time and he couldn't be saved, from what we saw, she made zero effort publicly to save him, but he still was completely blindsided. So that means she had all the right conversations with him, which may not have been difficult because his awareness level was like -5. And now, like you said, she's ready to take in the next misfit. And I think her working with somebody like Andy is great because A, no one's ever going to assume Andy has a real duo. And B, even if they think they're working together, Andy's kind of always going to be the more bumbling, right? And so he kind of takes away some of the limelight and the attention. So, I mean, I love the game Genevieve is playing. Tini's done a lot right. I don't know if Sol can win. You know, we both know this. Games are mostly won what you do post-merge, right? People kind of tend to forget about the pre-merge. So there's a lot of time left. I haven't necessarily been overly impressed with the game he's played. Now, he was in a bad position because his mortal enemy in Rome was kind of invincible.
Want to make one note, and I'm going to, again, until she's out of the game, I'm going to do what I can to convince myself that Sue is going to win this game, because that's been my winner pick since day one. There was a moment, very innocuous moment, that Julia pointed out while we were watching last night. It was when they split to everybody chilling for the challenge, and it was only one moment, and they're just talking at camp, and somebody is saying, oh, Sue, you should play pickleball. And she goes, oh, well, you know, I don't really like it. I play racquetball every day. If I'm going to extrapolate that and look too deep into it, which is my entire life, what I'm thinking from that is they could have shown any possible piece of dialogue from hours and hours and hours of footage. They chose that one, and it's foreshadowing. What the person was saying to Sue was, you should play pickleball, aka you're old. Pickleball's for old people. Like, you might be good at pickleball because, you know, that might be more your speed. And she responds with, well, I play racquetball, which, you know, isn't like tennis, but it's like, I'm better than pickleball. And I think my whole thing with Sue is like, she's going to get overlooked constantly in this game. She's going to constantly be like, oh, you're older than everybody. You're just the mom. You're just like somebody that is around. I'm just going to throw that out there until she's out. I'm going to keep doing this kind of thing. You know, everybody can sue me and hate me if you want. I know there's billions of people listening, and I'm pissing off the masses right now. You can't have a conversation about Survivor with Flip without talking about not just the winner pick, but your can't win pick. And we are at the point of the game now where it's maybe not just a giant shot in the dark, no pun intended, with Survivor. So who is your winner pick and why, and who is your can't win pick and why?
I am going to go with my can't win pick first, and I'm going to go with Kyle. I think we've seen it so many times. He's super likable. You know, he's come out and he's won safety twice. Once he doesn't win that immunity necklace, I envision it becomes a pretty straightforward decision for several of the players left in the game.
Yeah.
So that's my can't win pick. The numbers, I think that it will be tough for a guy to win. So I'm going to go with a woman. I'm going to go with Genevieve. I think her intellect is very high, and I think that she is navigating alliance as well, but I also think she seems to be navigating even people that she doesn't know that well. Well, it's a bit of a gut pick because she hasn't gotten like the most intense edit necessarily, but there's a reason I think they just showed her and Andy. That was kind of a long one-on-one conversation to show. And like you said earlier, I think Andy is someone who don't keep people in because you think they're the easy vote and you can get them next time. You're not going to get them next time. That's the epitome of Andy, is like, if you have the chance to get the bumbling person out, they made mistakes, like, just get them out. Because if you give them second life, they're playing with house money. And so I think I agree with you. I think he might be around for a long time. I just think him and Genevieve really might be sort of an unsuspecting pair. And there's bigger fish to fry, right? There's the four Tuku, and then there's the Sam and Sierra. Yeah, I'll go Kyle as my can't win, and I will make Genevieve my winner pick.
I think there's been at least one like Kyle can't win, even though I think everybody likes him. And last week on the pod, Steven, I believe, picked Genevieve to win.
Nice.
She's playing it as well as she possibly could right now. I don't know quite about her social connections just yet. It's hard to tell, but it seems like she doesn't need much. It seems like she operates better from the shadows, like the true shadows. I think for winners in Survivor, historically, you haven't seen too much of that, but that absolutely does not mean that she can't do it. I see her making a deep run into this game. To me, she screams almost like final five. They realize how dangerous she is and they get her out. But I think it's just as good of a winner pick right now as probably any, which is crazy because she had the purplest edit the first couple episodes that you could
ask. She really did. She really did. But like I said, I go back to the fact that, like, I don't want to say pre-merge doesn't matter, but the game is played after the merge, to be honest.
It is. Surprise question for you right at the end. We're both big Ravens fans. What's more likely? The Ravens win the Super Bowl or they lose to the worst team in the NFL at the next play in the fourth quarter?
They play Denver this week, so I live in Denver, so I'll have to talk to some Denver people here about football. But yeah, more likely that the Ravens win the Super Bowl this year. I think it's our year.
We have the greatest upside in the NFL. When we played there's no better team. But the Chiefs play the most consistently high-level football every single game. So you got to play your best in order to beat the best. You can't show up against the Browns and lose to Jameis Winston and say we're the best team in the NFL week to week.
Whatever. Correct. Correct.
All right, well, Chris, thank you so much for coming on. Super awesome to catch up with you. Great to talk more, maybe for the first time, about sort of the mental aspect of what you and on some level I went through when we were younger, playing these games and what it means for people playing Survivor out there. Love the analysis. Would love to have you back on sometime. Do you want to be?
Yes. Sorry, I was doing a fist bump on my seat, but I verbally consent to coming back.
I'm happy to hear it. Hi, I'm Flip, the host of Flippers Always Win. As previously mentioned, we have no sponsorships on this podcast. So in lieu of an ad, I would like to talk to you about lighters. We have one of those big, long candle lighters on the table in front of us in the living room. And I have a lighter that my friend Artie's band branded back in the day. Shout out Stig. And I still use that. And I bought that thing in 2017. When I was a kid, I felt as though lighters were a little bit scary because of my dad. He once told me that he only played with matches as a kid one time. And that night, his neighbor's house set on fire. So that scarred me a little bit. And then when I started using lighters, I did not know how to use them at all. I burned my thumb so many times, still do to this day. Couldn't even get the flame to light half the time, honestly. So lighters have been a bit of a challenge, but I'm proud to say that the obstacle has become more and more overcome as time goes on. Lighters, they're a lifelong lesson. It's the moment you've all been waiting for, the long anticipated return of Julia and her social media deep dive. I would say she's feeling better, but we both got some COVID and flu vaccines yesterday, so we're still not feeling fully better, but good enough to be back on her regular spot. How are you doing, Julia?
Been better. Also been worse. So feeling well enough to be back here in the pod studio, aka our living room. That's all I got.
Happy to have you back, as all podcasts with you on them are elevated.
Aww.
No disrespect to the ones that you weren't on, but you accentuate what we got going on here.
No, that's so sweet.
The previous episode here, if I remember correctly, you were a little bit more of a fan of splitting the game up. Is that how you remember it?
I liked it. I think if you aren't voting, shouldn't have a say. in this game in Survivor. I do wish maybe they had a little time to chat with everyone, but yeah, I was a fan of that.
I guess what I'm even getting at is splitting the game into two to begin with at that point. Are you a fan of that, or do you go either way on it?
Good question. I am a fan of it. I feel like that's a big group, you know, not everyone really knows each other. I think that six is more intimate. Once they start forming the jury, I think it's really important that everyone has a say in that.
I don't have an issue with what they're attempting to do. I get what they're trying to do. You know, when you have a 13-person merge, a 12-person merge, it may not be the most entertaining television if the whole group decides on one person, which they often do. And so, you know, they're trying to create drama in every episode. They're trying to create conflict in every episode. But it sort of backfired on them because, you know, obviously they weren't anticipating an entire tribe being together with one other person. And had it not been for that advantage that Saul had, it would have been essentially what they were trying to avoid to begin with, everybody choosing one person.
Right. So I don't know if they even had that advantage planned.
I agree. It could have been something they were like, we gotta throw this out there right now. We gotta save Rachel.
And that's my thought. I think that, well, just based on the edit she's getting, you know, Rachel is my winner pick along with most of the people who have been on this podcast. Yeah. Everyone seems to love Rachel. I think the producers really like Rachel. She is entertaining. She is very analytical. She makes a good assessment in her interviews. And I think the producers want to keep her around. I think when they saw how the teams were split, and then once they lost, they knew that Rachel was going to be going. And so I kind of feel like this advantage was a little bit of a scramble to save Rachel.
I think it's about 50% chance, yes, 50% chance it was already going to be there. Mm-hmm. They certainly, at this stage in the game, have done advantages in like similar situations in the past. They've hidden advantages at immunity challenges. They've been doing this a lot in the new era, hiding them when everybody's there in plain sight. Mm-hmm. And she is entertaining. I think people do like her. She plays the game well. The other side of it was, oh, crap. Again, we have an entire tribe that's on the losing squad. So now this isn't good television anymore. And that they just felt like it would be a twist that everybody hated at home, because it's not fair for, you know, Rachel and that person. There's getting screwed and then there's getting screwed. And honestly, had Rachel gone, she would have gotten majorly screwed. And the way that Tiana went, she got majorly screwed. Understand where you're coming from and why it had its value. This whole season, I've been really enjoying the way things are going, the flow of it. This was the episode where their way that they're structuring the game sort of backfired a little bit.
See, I completely disagree. And I know that we have a different take on this, because when they had their, like, the three idols that it was Teeny and two other players had, and they just kind of turned them in, and no one's been using the immunity idols. Everyone's been just kind of not utilizing those opportunities. And you said something like, oh, well, good. I'm glad they're doing this. And I was like, come on, guys. Why aren't you using these advantages? Be strategic about it. It's part of the game. Why aren't you using those?
I think the reason why they're not using them is because in the new era, they have been, you know, throwing all these different advantages and powers and whatever it is along, and people use them and they become targets right afterwards. Or it's just, if anybody thinks you have a power, if you use a power correctly, it just paints this giant target on you. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not beneficial to your game to have a three-way amulet where, you know, we saw it in 45. You're now trying to get those people out.
Right.
So it's beneficial if you end up with that idol, but only one of three does. And so I think they saw specifically the amulet. And that's my least favorite thing that they've tried to do. I think other than the beads in Survivor 43, if you're listening and you've seen that, you know what I'm talking about. The beads were the worst thing I've ever seen. We disagree on this. You want to see it for the strategic value, but I think the players understand that these powers are more of a burden than they're worth in the game. Like, sure, you can use them to get one vote, but the voting block changes every single episode. It's not like old Survivor where you could play one power to really help your alliance along. So black and white, everything changes every episode. And so you're just painting a target on your back if you use a power roll, because they're like, okay, that's a person who has now a winning argument at the end. Let's get them out sooner rather than later. Mm-hmm. But I agree with you in terms of wanting to see these powers be used, because that's great television and it is great strategy. I think the problem is that the powers themselves are bad powers on the production's part. I think if they want people to use powers and they want people to use advantages, they should be not just the advantages themselves should be better, but the situations that they're putting people in that they have to use them, they should just improve that. I don't know exactly how, but I think right now the players are reacting to them in the way that makes the most sense for them. We don't need this because it's going to hurt us more than help us.
Mm-hmm. I agree with some parts of that. I didn't. Actually, I would have liked if the amulet turned them all against each other.
Which we saw.
I like the drama. I like the drama. I think this cast is kind of kumbaya, and they're not giving in to the producers, and they're not stirring the pot enough. And that's kind of why I liked this advantage from last episode, because it was anonymous. And also, it got those people that you were so upset about not having any say in the vote, it got them kind of involved. That's it, right. Got one of them involved.
Let's move on to the social media deep dive. You have selected your subject.
I have selected Gabe. I'm looking at his Instagram right now. He's, I don't know, kind of boring a little bit, honestly.
Hey, go Ravens, though.
He is a big Ravens fan.
And he works for the Ravens. Well,
not anymore. He had to quit to go on Survivor.
But he was a radio host.
He was a radio host for the Ravens. So
similar to Sam in that regard. Working for an NFL team journalist.
Yes, but I wouldn't say they're very similar.
No.
Yeah, Gabe's social media is fine. Most of it is his career and Survivor. It's pretty obvious that he thinks he's like big man on campus. He thinks very highly of himself, which, you know, is great. It's great to have confidence. Good for him. But yeah, he's just a guy. I don't know. Like, also, do you know who these people are?
No. Should I?
No. Like, but like, who are these people and why is Survivor 47 hashtagged?
Just because he's on Survivor.
But these people have nothing to do with Survivor.
But he does. And so.
So just, he is chasing clout.
Yeah.
Is what I'm
saying. Yeah, he's chasing clout. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, he's a clout chaser. Before Survivor, let's go back to before Survivor post started. It's a lot of Ravens. It's a lot of just like where he was. I guess he visited Cleveland and Scranton. And
well, he used to work there.
Okay.
Apparently.
He loves these industry towns, Cleveland, Baltimore, Scranton. He's a blue collar guy, I think, is one way to look at it. He's a guy who he's a grinder, I think, from what I'm looking at here. He's working. He's traveling. He likes sports a lot. He is just a guy in that way for sure. Have you found any captions that speak to you?
There's one. Overall, I'd say his captions are kind of lacking. There is one that I found that is pretty entertaining. It's a picture of him and I'm assuming his mother.
Because it says hashtag mama.
Yes. Yes, that is why I assume it. At the Lazy Lizard Bar and Grill in Ocean City. It gets kind of a trashy place. Fun. Very fun. I love Ocean City. But it's kind of trash. And the caption of this is, how many intravenous drugs have you done since moving here? And it's a quote from his mother. And I think that is an accurate depiction of Ocean City.
All right. Well, yes. Hopefully nobody from Ocean City that is proud of being from Ocean City is listening. And if you are...
I don't think that person exists. I am... First and foremost, an Ocean City hater. Well, no, that's not true. I'm a Delaware hater and then Ocean City.
And yet we have sweatshirts from Delaware. It's just nothing we say adds up to what we feel and vice versa. So let's talk about the look-alike, the personality alike.
I have two look-alikes. One is an actor. Okay. And one is a cartoon character. And which would you like to try guess first?
I would like to guess the cartoon character as always. Please, clues in terms of era when this cartoon character was prevalent.
Heyday, I'd say, was the 90s, but this show is still on.
So that screams like The Simpsons to me.
Is the hair the clue? Like, is it somebody with big hair?
Yes.
Oh, it's the, I know, I kind of know who, it, just tell me, who is it?
Sideshow Bob, the evil clown that tries to kill Bart. One of my favorite Simpsons characters.
I can see that. I mean, and also, I mean, like, personality wise.
Yeah, I think that kind of speaks to how I feel about Gabe. I think he's kind of a villain.
Yeah. And he's trying hard to be one, too.
Yes, he. Well, I don't know. I think he's just trying to be a mastermind. I think he thinks that he can run this game in his sleep. He thinks that everyone's his pawn. And I don't like that. I don't respect it. I don't like how he talks about Sue and Caroline because they clearly really like him.
Well, Sue does.
Yeah, I guess we don't really know how Caroline feels. Caroline likes Sue. And so I don't know how she feels about Gabe individually.
I think Caroline knows that Gabe feels like he wants to play the game with her. And I feel like Caroline's like, okay, I like Sue. Gabe wants us here. That's more solid than what Kyle and Tiana were.
Yeah, well, Caroline just started getting an edit, so I don't know if we can determine how she feels either way.
I want to throw one more thing about Gabe in there on social media. So you're looking at Instagram. I am very prevalent on Twitter. And this past week, there has been some Twitter beef brewing, actually, between Gabe and two players who are not in the game anymore, Rome and Tiana. Gabe, the other night after the episode, tweeted a picture of the tribal council. And the caption was something like, are people awake in Hawaii yet? And that's where Tiana's from. And so Tiana responded to that saying, there's poor sportsmanship and then there's this, keep Hawaii out your mouth. And then Rome decided to chime in. Of course he did. Of course he did.
He has to be involved.
Right. And Rome says, you know, the game's over, man. You know, like, you don't need to be doing this. We're not playing anymore, which is funny. And then there's some beef going on between Gabe and Rome, where Rome was saying, maybe if you did X, Y, and Z, people wouldn't look at you a certain way. And then Gabe goes, maybe if you did X, Y, and Z, you'd still be in the game. And it's funny because Rome was talking about how Gabe was being a poor sport after this Tiana elimination. But when Rome got eliminated, we're still talking about him, even though he's been gone. He refused to elaborate on what it was that Kyle allegedly said that was so bad about Sue and Caroline in a post-game interview. He was still implying that Kyle said these terrible things, but he wouldn't say what they are. And people seem to think that Rome might be lying about it. And I personally am one to believe that, knowing that Kyle, you know, is somebody who really cares about his daughter the way he does, and that Rome is this lying, manipulative, I'll say whatever I need to say, threaten you guy. And so it was just a little bit hypocritical. People are looking like online Rome is criticizing Gabe for his post game actions in these interviews when he himself was saying things that were inappropriate.
Well, yeah, we've said many times that Rome is the least self-aware person probably to ever exist. That does not shock me in the slightest. And to me, that speaks to kind of the impression that I have of Gabe, is that he's kind of this macho, kind of aggressive guy. He likes to play hard. It's serving him well so far. So, you know, whatever, good for him. But you know who he reminds me of?
Who's that?
Now that I'm thinking about it, in personality, those two, excuse my language, douchebags that we were sitting behind at the Ravens-Bills game.
That's not fair to Gabe. That's not fair to Gabe.
Well, you know what? He's probably like that.
He's not constantly talking like that. Those guys would not. They were drunk. They were trash talking. They were constantly on their feet the whole game, making a mockery of themselves. I think there is a difference between being an aggressive game player and maybe being somebody you don't like personally and being like a drunk asshole all the time.
Well, no, he is a lesser version of them. I'm not saying it was exactly a one-for-one comparison.
Sure.
But I could totally see him running his mouth, trash talking at a Ravens game for sure.
Well, that's what people, I do that at a Ravens game. I do that to you.
Yeah, but I know you. You wouldn't do that to a random person you don't know.
I don't know that he would do it to a random person. I feel like he's for the team, you know, like, I don't know. I'm a Ravens fan, so I'm biased. I can understand where you're coming from. I personally think from what I see on TV, all the trash talk that he's been doing and all the things that we don't like that he's been saying have been in confessionals. Right. He's right. Keeping it pretty like solid, like pretty respectful in his like person to person interactions.
Because he's getting something out of it. in doing well in the game. I think if that stake was not there, like at a sports event where he is not a player,
right,
I think it would be different. I see those underlying tendencies in his personality.
Yeah, he's a guy who, you know, when things get competitive, he's gonna, you've seen him react pretty poorly after winning a challenge a couple times. He threw something, you know, he's you know, he wants to win real bad, and there's nothing wrong with that. And this is a guy who, like a lot of the guys who watch old Survivor, would like, you know, this macho, aggressive, athletic, you know, guy who's cutthroat.
Yeah.
Gabe is certainly not for the girls and the gays. He's he's not for the girls and the gays watching Survivor. He probably is for the guys, right?
Right.
And as somebody who finds myself in neither category, who finds myself smack dab in the middle of both, I feel pretty neutral about him. I can see why he irritates you and other people. He doesn't irritate me. I don't like some of the things that he's been saying, but I see the way he's playing the game and I respect it because he's being cutthroat. He's out front about it. He's saying, I want to use these people as pawns. I'm good. He's doing it so far. Now, is he going to get served a slice of humble pie at some point? I think so. I think it'll be late in the game, but I think so. I think he's going to get blindsided, and I think a lot of people are going to be really happy about it.
Mm-hmm.
I think ultimately he's good entertainment. He's a villain, and he brings some fiery competitiveness to the game that we haven't seen in a little bit. And
do you think that's why I don't like him? Because it feels like no one else is on that level. If it were like old Survivor and everyone was being super competitive and being cutthroat and not being like, oh, we're, you know, they're not here to make friends. That's kind of how old Survivor was. And the rest of the castmates, they're just a little bit nicer. They are a little bit more respectful of everyone else. And so those traits stick out like a sore thumb to the viewer.
100% agreed. I think that he is, his mindset wise, at least in the confessionals, are old Survivor.
Yeah.
And you know what? Like, I like that part of old Survivor. I don't like the bullying. I don't like the insults. I don't love the wounded birds comment that he made. I don't think that's appropriate or necessary. But I do miss some of that, you know, fieriness that was stoked in the early seasons where, you know, you really get at each other.
Right.
And I don't think that's coming back fully these days to like Survivor, but I do think it's something that's been missing in a lot of new era seasons. And, you know, every good show, whether it's reality or something, needs a villain. And Rome wasn't a serious villain, right?
No.
He was never going to win. He had a ticking time clock. Gabe can go far into this game.
Right.
Gabe, you know, potentially could win this game.
He could.
And so he's a good villain. And that brings an element that I'm happy about. He's a Ravens fan, so I'm a little biased. He's representing Baltimore.
He is. And that is great because I do love the city of Baltimore and they do need greater representation on the national stage. I agree with that 100%.
Yeah. I mean, Baltimore's, you know, I grew up in the DC suburbs, not so much the Baltimore suburbs, but I'm an Orioles and Ravens fan. So my life, I've been to Baltimore a lot of times. There is a passion in the city. The people that live there, they work hard. They're very proud of Baltimore, just like any other, like either currently or former industrial town. And, you know, it's a town that's had a lot of hardships and they're looking for a spark any place they can get it. Mm-hmm. And Gabe feels like that spark. And he comes from a place where it's not always niceties, right? You know, you got to hustle, you got to grind. And he's from a sports background. And sometimes you just got to go out there and fight. And that's what I feel like his mindset is. And I think he would do well for himself to maybe tone it down a little bit on social media. But obviously, like you said, he's chasing some clout right now. He's trying to be this social media villain. And I can understand why his former castmates and other fans aren't appreciative of it. I appreciate it as somebody who wants to be entertained. And it makes it feel like old school Survivor a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Now, would you like to guess my other lookalike?
Oh, we have another lookalike. I forgot.
Yeah, we got onto Sideshow Bob and then into him being a villain. And we just kind of
took a
whole other route.
I just like to say this is going to be between you and Chris, the worst edit so far, because I feel like, I don't know, maybe I'm feeling myself right now, but I feel like the content has been really good. And so it's going to be a nightmare edit if I'm trying to keep it under an hour. Maybe I'll just throw an hour 15 on there.
Why not?
I mean, I got four fans, so yeah. I mean, they'll listen to whatever.
Shout out Doug. Shout out Avery.
Yeah.
Shout out Ashwin.
Shout out Steven. And then the fifth fan, shout out Jessica.
Jessica.
Who's coming on. She's coming on in a couple of weeks.
You're ready, folks.
I think. I think maybe. Okay, so the second lookalike is an actor.
It's an actor. Was in a pretty successful TV show. I did not watch it, but I know of the show.
Is it Lost?
No, it's not Lost.
When did the TV show air?
Early to mid 2000s, I think. He was also in a lot of early 2000s rom-coms.
Huh, okay. Is the hair the clue again?
No.
No.
Your faces to me are similar. This one's a little bit of a stretch, but I see similarities in them.
Can you give me one additional clue? I'm just so bad at this game.
It's an HBO show.
Was it The Sopranos?
No.
Is it, well, The Wire would be funny because it's Baltimore, right?
Not The Wire.
Not The Wire. HBO, early to mid 2000s, feels like The Sopranos.
This show was on 8 seasons. That's a lot longer than I thought it was. From 2004 to 2011. Very male heavy cast.
Oh, Entourage.
Yep.
Is it Turtle?
Who is Turtle?
Jerry Ferrara?
No.
It's not Adrian Grenier.
It is. I think he looks like Adrian Grenier.
All right. Well, that's a wrap here. Thank you so much, Julia, for coming on.
They have similar faces. Although this guy really looks like Grocery Store Joe from The Bachelor. If any of you are Bachelor fans, you'll know who I'm talking about. That's a different podcast.
Julia, thanks so much for coming on. And surprise, surprise, you're going to be the main guest next week.
Woo!
So, you know, she missed a couple times. A couple people out there, shout out Doug, especially. You know, really missing the Julia segments. It's going to be made up for and more when she is the full guest on episode 8. Thank you so much.
What?
I hit you in our orbital bones. Well, you know, that's what you get. Gabe looks like Adrian Grenier.
He does.
No, he doesn't.
Oh, my God.
Well, that is a wrap on episode 7 of Flippers Always Win. Great episode. Thank you so much to Chris for coming on. Thank you to Julia for coming on and largely disagreeing on most of what we talked about. But genuinely, I think disagreement is great as long as it doesn't get personal. That goes for any part of life. I think it was great fodder. And I'm glad that the last couple episodes, I felt like the guests I've had on, we've started disagreeing a little bit more on parts of the game. And I actually really love that because that means the game is dynamic. So shout out to everybody that has different opinions. Democracy is all about being able to disagree while still keeping calm, moving forward. And let's hope for that as we head into this post-election phase. Flip signing off. And if I had a tagline, you know that I'd say it right about now.